Imagine Dragons, Whatever It Takes. My name is Nikki Strong, playing you all the pop music you love right here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, 2020 has been an extreme year for hurricanes, wildfires, and heat waves around the world. New reports from United Nations agencies list this year's record-breaking weather and the burning of fossil fuels as causes of continued global warming. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently urged world leaders to make 2021 the year that humanity ends what he calls its war on nature. He asked them to commit to a future free of planet warming carbon pollution. The Secretary General's comments come as the UN prepares for a December 12th online climate meeting in France on the fifth anniversary of the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. A main goal of that agreement is to keep increases in the Earth's temperature during this century to between 1.5 and 2 degrees Celsius. In a speech given at New York's Columbia University, Guterres said, "The state of the planet is broken. Humanity is waging war on nature. This is suicidal." In a report, the World Meteorological Organization said this year is set to end about 1.2 degrees Celsius warmer than the last half of the 1800s. Scientists use that time period as a starting point for warming caused by heat-trapping gases from the burning of coal, oil, and natural gas. Most trapped heat goes into the world's seas. Ocean temperatures are now at record levels. It also means 2020 will be one of the three hottest years on record. Climate Action Tracker scientists observe carbon pollution and the countries that promise to reduce it. A new study from the scientists says public promises to reduce emissions would limit warming to about 2.6 degrees Celsius. Warming could possibly be as low as 2.1 degrees Celsius. Guterres saw hope that more than 100 countries have promised that by 2050, they will not be adding more heat-trapping gases to the atmosphere than trees and technology can remove. China and U.S. President-elect Joe Biden have promised net zero carbon emissions. But Guterres said the two UN reports spell out how close we are to climate catastrophe. Nations should stop providing financial support for fossil fuels, he said. And countries need to fulfill their Paris promise to spend $100 billion yearly to help poorer countries develop cleaner energy. One of the new reports found countries would need to cut production of oil, coal, and natural gas by 6% each year by 2030 to keep global temperatures from rising more than 1.5 degrees Celsius. But a review of eight major fossil fuel-producing nations showed they plan to increase production by 2% yearly. That means twice the amount of carbon-based fuel would come onto the market than would be able to keep the Paris goal within reach.
Governments and officials around the world are hoping COVID-19 vaccines can create herd immunity to protect large populations. Some experts predict that giving a vaccine to just 2/3 of a population could protect whole communities or nations. But the effectiveness of such efforts is highly dependent on what the vaccines will be able to prevent. Herd immunity happens when a large percentage of a community, the herd, becomes immune to a disease, making the spread of disease from person to person unlikely. As a result, the whole community becomes protected, not just those who are immune, the Mayo Clinic notes on its website. But there are still many open questions about herd immunity and COVID-19 vaccines. For example, will the first vaccines be able to stop the spread of the virus or just stop people from getting sick? How many people in a population will accept a vaccine? Will vaccines offer the same protection to everyone? Josep Janza is an expert at the Stockholm-based European Center for Disease Prevention and Control. Herd immunity is sometimes wrongly understood as individual protection, Janza told the Reuters news agency. He added, herd immunity refers to community protection, not to how an individual is protected. One of the central questions about herd immunity and COVID-19 is the reproduction rate, or R-value, of the virus that causes it. R-value is a measure of how many people get the virus from an average infected individual in environments where no restrictions are in place. For example, an R-value of 2 means an infected person would be expected to pass the virus on to 2 other people. Winfried Pickel is a professor at the Medical University of Vienna. The problem is that, for now, we don't know exactly how fast the virus spreads without any precautions and with the normal travel and social activities we had a year ago, Pickel told Reuters. Health experts have noted that anything less than 100% vaccine efficacy would require an increase in vaccinations to reach herd immunity. Early data on the leading COVID-19 vaccines from Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna suggests only about 90% efficacy. Amesh Adalja is with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. He said a good target for immunity in the United States would be to have more than 70% of the population vaccinated. But the number could go up if vaccines are less effective, he added. The ECDC uses an estimated herd immunity level of 67% for its models. In Germany, Chancellor Angela Merkel said this month that COVID-19 restrictions there could be lifted once 60 to 70% of the population reached immunity. World Health Organization experts have also suggested a 65 to 70% vaccine coverage rate as a way to reach population immunity through vaccination. I'm John Russell.
American researchers say they have created the first full-size human heart model using 3D printing technology. The model was made with a specially developed 3D printer that uses biomaterials to produce a structure and tissues similar to a real human heart. The researchers say the model heart can be a useful tool to train medical professionals in operations related to human heart function. It could also be used as a basis for new research on ways to use 3D printing technology to produce fully operating hearts to replace in people. The research was led by an engineering team at America's Carnegie Mellon University. Results were recently published in a paper in ACS Biomaterials Science and Engineering. The team was led by biomedical engineering professor Adam Feinberg. The team had already developed a 3D printer that could bioprint collagen. Collagen is the main structural protein that is found in tissues throughout the human body. The goal of the latest project was to use this same bioprinting technology to create a realistic, full-size model of a human heart. Feinberg said in a statement his team was able to create such a model that doctors can carefully examine to prepare for heart operations. But the newly created models also permit the doctors to manipulate the heart to experience similar reactions to working with real tissue, he added. Scientists have made 3D printed models of the human heart before, but those models were made of harder substances, such as plastic or rubber, that were not effective in copying the soft tissue material found in the human heart. The new 3D printing process was also not easy, the Carnegie Mellon team said. This is because soft materials, such as collagen, start out as a liquid. When such substances are printed in air, they quickly collapse during the process. So, the researchers came up with their own method to 3D print soft materials. The method uses a gelatin substance to surround the structures during the printing so they do not collapse. The team's new model heart is made from a material called alginate, a soft, natural substance made from seaweed. The researchers say alginate has very similar properties to tissues that make up the human heart. For example, the researchers tested the 3D printed material with sutures, which doctors use to close up wounds during operations. The team said the alginate was able to stretch to support the sutures. Once they had perfected the process, the researchers made additional changes to the 3D printer to produce larger objects. They were able to use MRI images from a patient to model and print a full-size human heart. MRI stands for magnetic resonance imaging, a system for producing electronic pictures of the organs inside the body. Feinberg's team has also experimented with pieces of tissue designed to copy the function of individual heart elements, such as valves that open and close, and realistic blood vessels. The researchers say they also successfully 3D printed a model of a heart artery that could be used to train doctors. The group says the same methods could be used to create other realistic organ models as well, such as livers or kidneys. Former Carnegie Mellon student Iman Mirdamadi was another lead researcher on the project. He admitted that major hurdles still prevent the bioprinting process from producing a full-sized, functional human heart. But the latest progress helps establish the foundational groundwork for such efforts, he said in a statement. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. America's 18th president, Ulysses Grant, was elected to his second term in 1872. Grant had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South during the Civil War. He easily won the presidency in 1868 in the first election held after the war. Now he would spend four more years as President of the United States. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell about Grant's second term in office.
Grant's first administration was marked by dishonesty and shameful events. The situation grew much worse after he won a second term. Grant himself was not involved directly, but his administration suffered because of his ties to those who were involved. Soon after Grant's re-election, for example, there was a serious incident that involved many of his supporters in Congress. The Union Pacific Railroad Company had helped build a railroad across the American West to California. The cost of building the railroad was very high. The company got large amounts of aid from the government. Not all this aid came honestly. An investigation showed that leading members of Congress and even the vice president received shares of ownership in the company for free or at low cost. In exchange, they voted to use federal money to help build the railroad.
A few months later, members of Congress voted a pay raise for themselves and the executive branch of government. The pay raise would be retroactive. This meant the extra money would be paid for the 2 years already passed. Newspapers and citizens raised a storm of protest. Some lawmakers were afraid they would not be reelected, so they refused to accept the pay raise. Within 6 months, another shameful incident was uncovered. This one involved Jay Cook, one of the richest bankers in the country. He also was a good friend of President Grant. In 1869, Cook began raising money to build another railroad across America's West. He planned to sell $100 million worth of railroad bonds. Many people invested all the money they had in Cook's railroad, but Cook was unable to sell as many bonds as he expected. Soon, his banks had no money left. They could return no money to the thousands of people who had bought railroad bonds.
People hurried to other banks to withdraw their savings. Within hours, many of these other banks had to close. They, too, were out of money. Within a month, more than 5,000 banks across the country failed and closed their doors. This created an economic crisis. The New York Stock Exchange closed for 10 days. Factories closed. Thousands of people lost their jobs. Investigations showed that many of the banks that failed had violated banking laws. The laws often were not enforced because so many bankers had given money to the ruling Republican Party.
Other incidents followed. One of the biggest was called the Whiskey Ring. It involved a group of whiskey producers and some high officials who were friends of President Grant. Together, they found a way not to pay taxes on their whiskey. One of Grant's close advisors was at the center of the incident. A grand jury found him not guilty of any crime. However, it charged several hundred whiskey producers and government officials with illegal activities. President Grant had done nothing illegal, but the Whiskey Ring incident increased public feeling that there was no honesty in the White House. The feeling grew that Grant was a failure.
These incidents took place during a time of intense social and political change in the United States. The period after the Civil War was a time of industrial revolution and business growth. Most of this growth was taking place in the North. Before the Civil War, most businesses were small. Now, there were many companies with large numbers of workers. The companies also had large numbers of owners. They sold shares of ownership to anyone with enough money to buy.
A few men rose to positions of great power in business. In the steel industry, for example, there was Andrew Carnegie. He came to the United States as a boy from Scotland. He took a low-paying job in a factory that produced cotton cloth. He worked hard. In time, he earned enough money to take control of an iron factory. Carnegie soon built another factory. This one produced steel with a new technology. The system worked well. Soon, he was earning more than $1 million a year. He competed fiercely with other steel companies. He pressured railroads to transport his steel for lower prices than his competitors. And he cut his prices to force other steelmakers out of the business. Before long, Andrew Carnegie was the unquestioned leader of America's steel industry. His position gave him great power over the economy of the whole country.
What Carnegie did for the steel industry, John D. Rockefeller did for the oil industry. Oil became a useful product only in the middle of the 1800s. Rockefeller was part of a group of businessmen who built an oil processing center in Ohio. It was so successful that Rockefeller gave up his other business interests. He put all his money into oil production. He formed the Standard Oil Company of Ohio. John D. Rockefeller's new company used the same aggressive business methods as Andrew Carnegie. Rockefeller bought control of other oil processing companies. He started price wars that forced his competitors out of business. Most important, Rockefeller made a secret deal with the railroads. The deal greatly reduced his transportation costs. This permitted him to crush his competition. Before long, he controlled 95% of the oil processing industry in the United States.
As with steel and oil, America's railroads were an extremely important business in the 1800s. In fact, they were the nation's biggest business. They were as important as automobiles and airplanes are to the American economy today. Before the Civil War, most railroads were east of the Mississippi River. Most were small lines. In the years after the war, four major railroads got control of almost all the lines in the east, and they began building new lines in the west.
The first rail line to cross the nation was completed in 1869. It was built by two companies. One company started from the east and went west. The other went in the opposite direction. Finally, after 6 years of back-breaking labor, the two work teams met in northern Utah. They connected the rail lines with a golden spike. It was a great moment in the nation's history. Now, at last, the two coasts of the United States were united by a single line of metal rail. It was like the day 100 years later when the first American walked on the moon.
Like the steel and oil industries, the railroad industry also had its stories of intense business competition. In this case, the most influential man was Cornelius Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt already was rich from the shipping industry. Now he formed the New York Central Railroad. It was the largest railroad in the East. Cornelius Vanderbilt tried to take over the railroad industry. He was not as successful as Andrew Carnegie with steel, or John D. Rockefeller with oil. A group of other rich railroad owners blocked his plans. But Vanderbilt did succeed in winning a great amount of power and influence.
Vanderbilt and the other new leaders of industry were powerful, and they let others know it. They sometimes made statements about how they did not have to obey the law. Other powerful men thought the same way. Some were officials, elected or appointed to serve in the federal government. Political power blinded them to their responsibility to be honest and fair to the public. As a result, the Republican Party lost public support. The blame was placed on Ulysses Grant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.